All right, quick announcement before we begin. I was supposed to take off a week in October and didn't do it because of the hurricane. It felt like it was too quick, so I'm burned out. So we will not have class this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. If I'm still burned out next Sunday, I'll let you know ahead of time, but I'm considering no class next Sunday, so... but we probably will have class on Sunday because I can probably suck it up for 2 hours. If you can suck it up and get here, I guess I can too. So, but just to let you know, so no class here. That would be the 14th, 15th, and 16th are the dates. All right, let's make sure you are in fellowship and let's continue on here as we approach God's Word and unfortunately deal with information that is... edifying but depressing. It is designed to build us up in some way so that we're not fooled by what we see and hear in the devil's world, which is largely a world filled with brainwashing and with techniques designed to control the populace, to fall in line with Satan's thinking, to promote his agenda, and that is something we obviously as believers want to avoid. So here we need to have God's view of this, and it's more difficult, obviously, if you're personally involved, and because it is our country, we are personally involved. There's a part of me who studies this when I study it and have to teach it, that as a patriot, you don't care for these kinds of things happening to your country. But then again, if you love your country, you know we shouldn't be involved in a lot of what we're doing. And we have to be honest about this. This mentality of my country right or wrong is not good enough. That will get you into trouble. Well, on the other hand, that America can do no wrong, that's way wrong. That's not even close. And again, maybe our motives in some cases might be good. Often, I'm afraid they're not. Often, I'm afraid it's tied to the pursuit of money and luxury and easy living. Low prices, thank God we got Walmart. The price roll downs are always coming, baby. And so the reality is, of course, that we live, again, at a level of luxury that most people have never experienced in history. That we are very few in terms of all of that. A small part. But the overriding arrogance that comes out of that is really what's going to do us in. This mentality that we're above it all because we're Americans and we're better somehow isn't true. Now, obviously, when you consider the nature of mankind, there isn't any race or culture you could point to and say, well, they're quality people. If you examine their history, you'll find out that many of them are just as warlike and brutal, and people talk about human rights. They'll kill you just as quick in most countries as they will here, and maybe quicker in some places. So, again, I've never seen, I don't have any reason to go anywhere and don't really want to, but I would not advise traveling out of this country at this point if you're an American. And then when they get caught or killed or kidnapped or beheaded, everybody feels bad. But why were you there in the first place? You knew the risks. You knew this environment in which we live. This atmosphere of American hatred, the hatred of the West, in fact. So, as we finished off here, first session here, this deal of synecdoche in point 55, which is the part, again, being used as the whole, the city for the nation. In 66, there can be little doubt that New York City is already viewed by many as the de facto capital of the United States. Now, the de jure capital, the legal capital, is Washington. But the de facto capital isn't Washington. Because the reality is much more is controlled through the United or through New York in terms of money and power and all of that than is actually run through Washington. But obviously great sums of money run through both places. Obviously with the quote in the halls of power. But our president would probably prefer to live in New York if you asked him. Why? Why? Because it's viewed as a better place in many ways. So, it's the de facto capital of the U.S. since it is the center of the economic world in many ways. The financial district is an area at the southern tip of Manhattan, which includes such, you gotta admire some, you know, you buy this for $16. It's turned out pretty good. This is a good investment if you bought it, which includes such important financial organizations as Wall Street, the New York Stock Exchange, and the New York Federal Reserve Bank, which contains billions of dollars worth of gold. And 68, in fact, those that manipulate and control the monetary system have more power than our politicians. Let's face it, we know, sadly, unfortunately, politicians take their orders elsewhere. They're not serving the American people. And if they get too radical about wanting to serve the American people, they'll get rid of them. And there's no doubt in my mind that they develop files on all these people and keep track of. This is the value of fame. Everybody gets to know everything about your life. And this is the advantage of power. Then someone wants to bring you down, they got to have some dirt on you. And they're plenty capable of getting it because, let's face it, all too often our politicians are caught with their pants down, both figuratively and literally. And we know this. And there was a rather graphic line off of Lou Reed's album, New York, called Straw Man. And I won't repeat it here, but it's essentially a pretty graphic line about our politicians and their predilection towards pursuing money. And again, if you want to know most things in this world, follow the money. That will tell you what's going on in reality. Whereas you can get all these smoke screens about what's really going on. And again, I watch these talking heads get together every day and pontificate and vent their views on everything. And I just think, why would anyone watch this? I don't watch it. I just flip by it. But I see it happening frequently. It's all like when I'm at the gym, there's like this bank of 7 or 8 televisions there. And at noon, because we usually go up there around noon, because strangely enough, that's a good time to go to the gym. Nobody wants to go at lunchtime to speak of. And at least at the Y where we go. And I'll sit there and 5 or 6 out of these 7 or 8 televisions, how many are there? I don't really remember now. But they'll all be on these talking head TV shows. CNN, MSNBC, and of course a different kind of talking head, but SportsCenter, and all that. And then there'll be one local channel, I think, and then there, you know, it's all these other shows about the stock market. But they're all just getting on there and sharing their views of what it is they think's happening. So, those, again, who control the money system have more power than our politicians. Why does everybody hang on every word that the Fed announces? Because they've got the power. I mean, when you can take 2 cents worth of paper, 2 cents worth of ink, and print up a $100 bill and sell it for $100, you've done good. That is significant profit. And why do we trust the Fed? Because they can see into the future. They see inflation lurking out there where we can't see it. They understand things we just can't understand. No, they don't. This is a joke. It is the manipulation of the economic system. That's exactly what it is. Through the controlling of interest rates and other factors. The control of the money supply. And again, whoever runs the money runs the show. That's the nature of power in this world. So this is why men are to be men. They're to take charge of their finances, run them honorably, and deal with all of this. Because, number one, the weaker vessel is not supposed to have to do this. But that doesn't mean men are men anymore. We live in a society where men are largely not men. They're no longer in charge of even their own households. And that's so emasculating. And you wonder why we have depression in this country. Well, you've got half of the population's emasculated, so there you go. That would be depressing as a man. I couldn't live that way. Now, I love my wife, and I don't want to ever do anything to hurt her. I mean, I know I have, but I don't in my heart of hearts. But I'm not going to let her tell me what to do. I'm not going to let her run the household. That's not her job, for the first thing. And, but she's not a slave in the household. On the other hand, I've seen this in men. Oh, get me another beer. As they sit there and watch the TV with the remote. Don't touch the remote. The remote belongs to the man, and you know this. I've seen that kind of mentality. That's equally as wrong. The man that's emasculated is just as mad as the pig that sits there tossing off orders like he's a god. That's not good either. So there has to be a balance in all of this. And that's what marriage is supposed to be about, a loving balance, a mutually beneficial relationship. Well, those who control the money system have more power, and they are far more interested in maintaining their positions than they are in doing what is right or what is in the best interest of this nation. And 69, the basis for the woeful dirge over Babylon is found in the fact that her destruction came in such a rapid fashion. The destruction comes in a literal hour, of a literal day, as seen in a comparison of verse 8 with verses 10, 17, and 19. And 70, this would have been incomprehensible in John's day, since conventional means of warfare would not allow for the total devastation and defeat of an enemy, and by the way, a powerful enemy, in such a short period of time. So therefore, the interpreter is forced to look for a means by which the richest, most powerful nation of its time is reduced to a desert without inhabitant in such a brief time. And 72, as will continue to be documented, the only means that satisfy the Old Testament prophecies and these verses in Revelation involve distant warfare using intercontinental missiles and nuclear warheads. And again, most people don't want to think about this. They just want to pretend it's not going to happen. It can't happen. It's just too horrific to think about, so I'll ignore it. That doesn't make it go away. You know, it might be horrific to think about, and it is, and it ought to be frightening. The good news for us believers is we'll be out of here. So how much more should we be redeeming the time now, knowing that the end of all things is coming upon us, in fact? And what sort of people, Peter says, should we be in terms of righteous living and godliness and setting an example and warning people the end is upon us, people? So what? Let them make fun. Let them laugh at you. Let them say, oh, I've heard this all my life. I've heard all the excuses and responses to this. Oh, no, that could never happen. Oh, you're some kind of religious nut. No, I'm not. I'm speaking words of sober truth. That was what Paul was told. Paul, your great learning has driven you insane. Paul said, nope, I'm speaking words of sober truth, Festus. And that's the way it is. So people don't want to hear it. Doesn't mean they don't need to hear it. I mean, I think myself personally, wouldn't you want to know if this was happening and you were going to go through it? Maybe you'd prepare. Who knows what effect your words might have on someone as you witness to the truth and tell them, hey, this nation's going to be destroyed. You can call you any patriotic, unpatriotic, all the things they want to say. No, I'm for our nation, but I'm for our nation doing right. I'm for our nation being a model of diplomacy and righteous living and these sorts of things. But unfortunately, we're not. And you have to come to grips with that. And so, and again, people in the military, I know they don't like hearing this. Because the military, they think they're the answer to everything. They're protecting our democracy. They've given their lives. Thank you for your service. You haven't done anything except gone into innocent countries in some cases and taken over for the multinationals. That's all you've done. And again, we're all too willing to sacrifice our youngest and our best and our brightest to all of this. Why? That's insane. That's insane. So this is not a good, if you ever was a time to get into the military, this wouldn't be it. Certainly not if you're an unbeliever. But again, many, many jobs, many things do not work with doctrine. If Bible class is going to be your priority, there are a lot of jobs you just can't take because it's going to conflict with your priorities. And so you either have to work within the confines of that job and say, okay, here's my priorities. I need you to work with me. And if not, then start praying about it. Ask God to get you out of there and put you in a place that allows you to do the right things. To be at 5 Bible classes a week. That's the ideal. Now, if we don't want to do this anymore, let's cut back to 2 or 3. Hell, let's just all stay at home and I'll just record this. And we'll just send it out in emails. Oh, well, we can post it, I guess. You can access it there just like you always do. But that's not our mandate. Our mandate's face-to-face, last time I checked. It's not just teaching doctrine. It's face-to-face. That's what we're here for. And again, these are the things that happen. Well, the basis for this, again, it all happens in 1 hour of one day. The only way you can do this today is through global thermonuclear warfare. And it's ironic because all of our movies have been leading to this. back from the 80s. You remember the little war games? Shall we play a game? Yeah, let's play global thermonuclear warfare. Oh, yeah, that was all, you know. And then you had, you know, Red Dawn, Soviets invade and take over. You got the Wolverines out there. Going to save the country? No, they're not, but this has been building and going on. You got all these wars about invasion from outer space. All these aliens coming in. Well, we've got aliens here, but they're demons. They're not aliens from other planets. They're fallen angels. Well, what is both stated, the strong city, and implied by that appellation, is that the nation in view continues to maintain its global military and economic strength until the time of its destruction. Now, again, this is relative. Do not presume just because that in a relative sense, we're way better off than most nations. Oh, we are. There's no question about it. That means that this guarantees you're going to be personally prosperous right up to the end. And, well, first, God has his will for each of us, and that will depends on what his sovereign plan entails. So I don't know whether God's will is for you to be wealthy. I don't know if God's will is for you to be poor. I don't know if God's will, what God's will is in terms of finances. But what I do know is that God has a plan, and we have to seek to acclimate. But as a whole, this nation is going to be prosperous. You see it in the over-exuberant, overbought stock market, which is going to have a correction at some point. And when it does, who's going to be ready for it? Because it's got to come. At least that's conventional wisdom says it does. So again, we may maintain our relative wealth up to the end. That strong city here that should have been apparently 1810, not 1809. And then 1811, and the merchants of the earth weep and mourn because nobody buys their cargoes. So 74, further, a careful consideration of the timing of this event indicates that it must come just prior to the middle of Daniel's 70th week. Because Daniel's 70th week, again, on the one end, here by the rapture, on the other end, bounded by the second advent, the return, the bodily return of Christ. In the middle, you got two equal periods of 1,260 days, 3.5 years, 42 months. All those terms are all used. And so we're talking again, my suspicion pretty well is that the destruction of the U.S. is also going to mandate the change in the calendar. Or at least it certainly is a change in the prophetic calendar. Because these years are not 365 days as they are now. These are clearly 30 month days is what's in view. So here actually technically kicks off what we call the Day of the Lord. The Day of the Lord begins at the middle of Daniel's 70th week. And just prior to this, wail for the Day of the Lord is near. Within this like 5 or 6 month period leading up to that, the U.S. gets taken out. And then again, not too far after that, all the nations are going to get theirs too. So while they may weep and mourn for us, they won't be doing it for long because they're going to be facing their own catastrophes. And they'll forget about us in a heartbeat. So the timing is proximate to the Day of the Lord, which begins technically at the middle of Daniel's 70th week. That's Isaiah 13:6. Several of these passages affix for us, and we know also from the book of Revelation, the very fact that this is included with all those events of Daniel's 70th week, that we have to place this event in the end times. 13:6, wail, for the Day of the Lord is near. Well, near is not here. I know the difference between being nearby, and being at a place. Well, the Day of the Lord hasn't arrived yet, is what he's saying. And that can't happen until this comes. It will come as destruction from the Almighty. Behold, verse 9, the Day of the Lord is coming, cruel with fury and burning anger. The Day of the Lord is that time in history when God openly intervenes in the affairs of man and judges what his righteousness demands. He has been patient, as we see. This is the thing that characterizes God's dealings with mankind, is patience. The Lord is patient. You can find that phrase in a number of places. Not wishing for any to perish. It's God's will that all be saved and come to the full knowledge of the truth. But his patience is running out. And people think, well, his patience will never run out. Oh, it will. We're using these things that we ascribe to humans, these anthropomorphisms and pathisms, the way God feels and acts, ascribing human emotions and qualities to him, that he truly doesn't have in that sense. So it will come as destruction, cruel with fury and burning anger to make the land a desolation. So B, there is a warning that is issued for at least 2 years about this impending destruction. Let's look at Jeremiah, since we're right here in the Old Testament. Jeremiah 51, 46. And we see two mentions of this. Two announcements are mentioned in the book of Revelation. One in chapter 14 and then the one we get in chapter 18. Now, are they given at the same time? It doesn't appear that they are. But how far apart are they? I couldn't tell you. But my suspicion is they come about a year apart. Now, so that your heart does not grow faint, and you are not afraid at the report that will be heard in the land. For the report will come in 1 year. And after that, another report in another year. And violence will be in the land, with ruler against ruler. Behold, the days are coming when I will punish the American idols. How funny. That is comical to me. The American idols. God's going to punish. And I don't mean Kelly Clarkson. Although she would be one of them, technically. You know. So, people, who's going to be our next idol? I don't have any idols. Thanks. I'll pass. But our idols, our sports teams that we worship and follow. And again, I like sports. Don't get me wrong. I like a lot of things. But I also try to keep them in perspective when it comes to doctrine. I don't say, well, I like, you know, even if OU makes a national championship, if someone were to give me tickets to the game and it conflicted with class, I wouldn't go. I'd go give them to somebody else who could use them. So, and every month on Tuesday, there's a wine tasting I want to go to. Every month on Tuesday, I don't. Because it conflicts with Bible class. And I'm not going to do that. That's not my priority. And I personally believe that when you deny yourself and take up your cross, that this is going to bring you under God's blessing. When you quit giving in to yourself and demanding that it's all your way. But most people are not going to do that. I understand that. These have to be conscious choices we make to do what God's will is in the given time. So I will punish the idols of Babylon, and her whole land will be put to shame, and all her slain will fall in her midst. And then there's that other announcement. We've seen that in Revelation 14:8. So the initial angelic warning is issued at the beginning of Daniel's 70th week. But God clearly allows some time under grace for people to exit the nation. Jeremiah 50, verse 8. And this is a command essentially to his people, the Jews. But anybody who becomes a believer after the rapture should take this seriously. So wander away from the midst of Babylon and go forth from the land of the Chaldeans. Be also like male goats at the head of the flock. In other words, set the example. Make this notable. Be conspicuous about it. Don't let people guess about what you're doing. Announce, I'm leaving America because it's going to be destroyed. And you would be wise to get out as well. But obviously, clearly, one of the things that becomes very apparent, and we don't have any idea about the numbers. All I can tell you is the approximate population of the U.S. now is about 350 million people. But how many of those are going to be left after the rapture, and then how many after the Exodus? Who knows? Even if there's only 200 million left, that's a lot of people to die all at once. Well, they won't die all at once, but a lot of them will. So there, also 51:6. Flee from the midst of Babylon, and each of you save his life. You have your life is in your hands. You make your decisions. You are the master of your own destiny. But we all are. This is not anything new. This is called the doctrine of personal responsibility. Not popular again in Babylon today. I get that. It's all daddy and mommy's fault. It's all my environment. It's all my bad friends. It's all my influences. It's never me. I'm not to blame. I can't be responsible for my mistakes. First, that's it's implying I make them. And but if I do, it's other people's fault. It's not mine. I can't be responsible. I can't be held responsible. And you can also see here Revelation 18:4. So D, the destruction of the U.S. comes very close to the middle of Daniel's 70th week. Revelation 8:1, in a little bit of an enigmatic verse that most people just gloss over. And in the Revelation, the term an hour is always used technically for the whole of Daniel's 70th week. It's called an hour. See, this is why I tell you, when you find these words day or hour, you have to ask yourself, is this a metaphorical term or is it literal? And you have to look to the context first and then compare that with the larger context of the book you're in. Then you have to compare that with the overall tenor of Scripture. And, okay, so how does this fit here? Well, when the Lamb broke the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about a half an hour. Why? What's that mean? And why? What's the necessity of the silence? Well, this is a way of saying, in a figure, that nothing much happens, in some sense, in the first half of Daniel's 70th week. About the first half. About a half an hour. Not quite the half hour. And so just before that half hour is up, all hell's going to erupt in terms of the destruction of the U.S. Also, the release of those demons down there, from the demonic creatures in Tartarus, the ones involved in the Genesis 6 invasion. They're going to be turned loose. And they're going to torment people unmercifully. And then there's the ejection of Satan and the other demons that are still loose from heaven and having them confined to the earth. So for the first half hour, though, none of that half hour, first half, 3.5 years roughly, none of that happens. It's all kind of quiet. Life's going to go on planet Earth pretty much as normal, other than they're going to have to kind of explain what happened to a bunch of people. That's going to be, that'll have to be explained away. And no doubt they'll come up with a plausible, rational explanation that everybody will accept, whatever it is. Well, aliens took them. God burned them off the planet because God has revealed that he's for us and he hated these Christians. Maybe that'll be their doctrine. I don't know. How weird can they get? As weird as they want to, because all they got to do is convince a bunch of unbelievers under Satan's spell that that's not a bad place to be. And so how are they going to explain it? I don't know. I have no idea how they're going to explain it. But for the first half of, essentially, God's gracious and gives people time to, and that gives the 2 years for the warnings to get out of Babylon. Apparently, 2 full years of warnings. They go out apparently pretty quick. And then all hell begins to break loose, and that's the trumpet judgments. And these first 4 trumpet judgments all deal with the nuking of the United States. And that takes us right up to just about the middle of Daniel's 70th week in terms of the chronology of it. But every one of these trumpet judgments, as you look at them, you can see that they are the response, they are the outflow, the result of nuclear devastation. The first sounded, and there came hail and fire mixed with blood, and they were thrown to the earth. And a third of the earth was burned up, and a third of the trees, and a third of the green grass. And the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea. And a third of the sea became blood. The great mountain is our country. That is a figure of speech for the great kingdom, the U.S. that's destroyed. And the fact that it's burning with fire is the nuclear part of it. Thrown into the sea means it disappears from history. Just like if you throw something in the sea, you'll see the waves for a little bit, the ripples will go out. And then if you look, there's no evidence that it was there. And there'll be no evidence. Nobody's going to come over here to investigate or to reestablish this nation at all. It'll not be inhabited from generation to generation. And so then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. And it fell on a third of the rivers and a third of the springs of water. This is the pollution, the radiation of the freshwater supply. The salt water supply, what's going to happen? The third of the sea became blood. Do you want to take this literally? Has it become like human blood? Or would a red tide satisfy all of this? And again, if you've ever seen a good red tide, it's red. It looks awful. And you don't want to swim in it. And really, you don't want to be out at the beach if it's there. It's toxic. It's not good for you. So I know it ruins the poor tourists when they come down and have a red tide, but that's just the way it is. So all of this, a third of the waters became wormwood. And many men died because of the waters, because they were made bitter. So again, all four of these first trumpets are the outflow of the destruction of the U.S. The fourth one sounded, and a third of the sun and a third of the moon and a third of the stars were struck. So that a third of them were darkened. And the day would not shine for a third of it, and the night in the same way. And again, this isn't, you know, the sun and the stars aren't falling out of the sky. Believe me, if any star ever impacted the earth, you wouldn't have to worry about it. The sun, again, is just a small to medium-sized star. And if you could imagine the sun hitting our planet, how would that go for us? Not well. Not well at all. So these have to be taken in some ways metaphorically. These are figures for something. But what it is talking about is that the rotation speed of the earth has increased because of all of this. Again, many factors are going to play into that. How the rotation speed has changed. But essentially, it's going to take us 16 hours now to complete a cycle instead of 24. It's going to take, and this is what it talks about in the book that most people way misinterpret in the prophecies about the end times in the Gospels. And Jesus said, if those days had not been shortened, and so they have some arbitrary God shortened the days, i.e. he instead of 7 years for Daniel's 70th week, he made it slightly less. No, that's not what it means. It's not as though he's taking time off the end of it by shortening it. The days are shortened because the days are shortened. They go by faster. 16 hours. And again, what's all this going to do to motors and all of this? What's all, the change in carbon dioxide, oxygen levels, all the things that are reliant to keep our engines running and this and that, all going to be dramatically changed. And this explains the incapacitation, why a third of the ships can't sail, why they can't operate anymore. The mechanics won't work in many cases. And let's forget, now not concern ourselves or totally, but let's not forget just the fallout part of this either. The stuff that gets all over everything at some point. Can you imagine fallout containing human blood? Don't they in the hospital try to minimize that contact with human blood? They don't really want your nurses, you know, getting blood all over themselves. Or doctors. Why do they? Because they recognize that it's unsafe at a certain level. And why is it unsafe? Well, it's really going to be unsafe in this medium, where it's raining blood, as it were. But let's just say it's just a fine mist. That's still gross. I wouldn't want it on me. And this is what they'll deal with. So the destruction, again, comes very close to Daniel 70, to the middle of it. The effects of which are recorded in the trumpet judgments and is immediately followed by the release of the demons from Tartarus. That's Revelation 9:1. I saw a star from heaven which had fallen to the earth. Again, could this be identified as Satan possibly? Because this is about the time of the angelic ejection from the third heaven. Maybe it's another angel. He's given, we're told his name, but that doesn't really help us in that sense because it talks about his name in the Greek there. And they have, verse 11, as a king over them. Well, I take it back. That's not the angel that's released. That's the king that, quote, rules over them in the abyss. And his name in Hebrew is Abaddon. And in the Greek name, he has the name Apollyon. Both of those mean destroyer. And so like the, you know, in Ghostbusters, the destroyer is coming. And what form will the destroyer take? It's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. It won't be. But these destroyers are coming. And they're going to decimate the planet. And again, all of this is not too far off in the future. So this is immediately followed by the release of the demons from Tartarus. He opened the bottomless pit, verse 2, and smoke went up out of the pit. like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by the smoke of the pit. Factor this in now to your atmospheric conditions as well. The nuclear atmospheric conditions, the blood and the hail and the fire, the nuclear fire, now this intense black smoke are billowing out from somewhere in the center of the earth. That's where this is. And then out of the smoke came locusts upon the earth. And power was given to them as the scorpions of the earth have power. And they were told not to hurt the grass of the earth or any green thing or any tree. And they were not permitted to kill anyone, but to torment. They're allowed to torment the men who did not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And again, whether this seal is visible, this seal is the one talked about in chapter 7. Specifically, the 144,000 that are sealed. And they were not permitted to kill anyone but to torment for 5 months. And their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it stings a man. Never been stung, heard it isn't pleasant. Heard that it's not fun, myself. And so they get to do that for 5 months and then they're called off. But that takes us right to the middle of Daniel's 70th week. And no doubt Antichrist will take credit for delivering mankind from these horrible demon locusts. And again, they're not really locusts, they're demons. But they choose to take this god-awful form that is described later on in this chapter. And the appearance in verse 7 was like locusts prepared for, was like horses prepared for battle. And on their heads appeared to be crowns like gold. And their faces were like the faces of, these are disturbing little creatures. Little, we don't know what size they are though, assuming they're the size of a locust, which is essentially about a big grasshopper. And generally speaking, that's what they're talking about in the Bible when they talk about locusts or grasshoppers. And they had hair like the hair of women. Well, this indicates their absolute rebellion against God. They have long hair. For males to have long hair indicate, I mean, you just write across the forehead, rebellious. Rebelling against God. For, you know, you don't have to have it like this. But to have hair that you can't tell from behind, is that a man or a woman? I mean, if you just had to identify it from the locks. You know, obviously some guys have hair like that, and you can tell because they're football players. You don't mistake them for a woman from behind. Others I've looked at and thought, I don't know. But the long hair on a man is a way, it's absolute revolt of the soul. That these people are in complete rebellion against God. And this is how they manifest it. And these locusts, these quote demon locusts, do the same thing. And they had tails like scorpions, verse 10, and stings, and their tails is their power to hurt men for 5 months. And apparently they're just given carte blanche. As often as they want to sting you, they can. If you're an unbeliever and you're not part of God's deal out there. Well, therefore, the precise timing would place this judgment in the first month of the third year of Daniel's 70th week. And now let's get through at least I think we can, the exegesis of these and get this prepared. And the merchants of the earth. Now we move to the second group and their response. We've heard about the kings and those in political power. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her. Because no one buys their cargoes anymore. Again, and as a connective chi, emporos, we get our word emporium from this, E-M-P-O-R-O-S. Again, importers as opposed to massive wholesalers as opposed to just mom and pop little sellers of stuff on the corner. The merchants of the earth, again, depending upon how one wants to deal this, an attributive genitive makes it more like an adjective, earthly merchants. Or an ablative of source, merchants that find their source here on planet Earth. This is where their realm is, their bailiwick. And they weep, again, clio, same verb, customary present. They do this from time to time, or continually, depending upon how bad a hit they take, I guess. And pentheo, that's mourning or grief, P-E-N-T-H-E-O. It's a present indicative, both of these are. The merchants of the earth will mourn and weep. Weep and mourn. Over her, preposition epi, on the basis of or because of her. On account of the fact that they've lost her. Because, Hadi here introduces the real reason, the basis for this, the cause of their mourning. And guess what? It's money. Well, this is the last days. Money is the answer to everything, people. Come on. If you're not making enough money, you should be. Money will make you happy. It'll buy you everything you need, except peace of mind. Other than that, and this is the idea that people have. And of course, I'm being facetious. This isn't the mentality we are to have. Because no one buys their cargoes. The word here in the accusative is set forward for emphasis, gamos. G-O-M-O-S with the definite article. That's the lading or freight of a ship. The merchandise, the cargo. And here it's a collective singular. Again, it's not just one cargo. It's all the cargoes they're shipping. So no one buys, and they've translated that by the New American Standard as a plural, even though it's strictly, I'll take that back. It is a plural. I'll take that back. No, it's a singular. Again, I had that right. So this is a collective singular again. And the cargoes of them, in other words, the cargoes they've produced, the products they make, no one, absolutely not one, udice, negative u plus the numeral heis, not one, no one, buys them, agorazo. This is where the word agora comes from. This is to engage in activity in the agora, in the marketplace. This is to market goods. No one buys or purchases them any longer. Uketi, O-U-K-E-T-I, means not yet or not any longer. Not now. Now we get a listing of what types of things does Babylon import. And see if you notice anything on this list that is true of America. That we actually import these things. Cargoes of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls, fine linen. How you got any Egyptian cotton sheets? How about that? Where do you buy your stuff? What do you buy? Is it the highest and the best? If you can afford it, fine. I don't have anything against. I pray you'll prosper and be in good health even as your soul prospers. But your soul prosperity's got to come first. And that means having your priorities straight about Bible class first. Then God's free to turn loose on you. But if your priorities aren't right, don't ask God to bless you. You're wasting your time. I mean, you got two kids. They're both, say, 7 or 8 years old. And one of them is generally obedient and nice and kind and does what you say. And the other one's argumentative, hateful, sullen, sulks, pouts. Now, which kid do you want to do something for? Well, one of them I want to do something for. I'm going to take him to the bedroom and apply a little knowledge to the seat of higher learning. That's what I want to do for that one. But you want to do, and God is a normal parent in that sense. He delights in blessing his children, but his children have to respect all this and put God first in these matters. And the acid test of this is Bible class. This is where it all starts. So this has to be square one, ground zero, as it were. This is the launching pad where you get the information. Then again, you have to go out and apply it. So we got here, again, gamos. All the genitives that follow are genitives of content. Again, they've translated this singular as a collective singular. It's because you've got these things that all follow it, so clearly they're different cargoes. Gold is krusos, C-R-U-S-O-S. Silver, aguros, A-R-G-U-R-O-S. A-G, that's the chemical deal there for silver. On the periodic table. And stones, lithos. Stones, valuable stones, precious stones, diamonds, rubies, topaz, emeralds. Pick all the stones you like. Rubies, sapphires, whatever you like. Any stone that's of any value. All these are imported. Don't watch the movie Blood Diamonds or Blood Diamond. I didn't watch it, but I can tell you what it's about. It's about people being killed for diamonds and exploiting these things so we can send them to De Beers. And then on to Macy's and the rest of the places we sell them. So diamonds, rubies, etc., valuable stones, and margaritas. This is not the drink. Margaritas. Ready for one right about now? Margaritas. Pearls. That word means pearls in the Greek. Pearls. And bousinos, linen. Here again, collective for all linen goods and garments. Your towels, your sheets, your pillowcases. Whatever you use, your tablecloths. Wherever you would use linen in your house. That you would have for those purposes. Fine linens here. You got busenos, and that means linen and purple and silk and scarlet. Purple goods or dyed goods is porphura, P-O-R-P-H-U-R-A. That means purple. Purple and sirikos, literally pertaining to Ceres. And this idea, S-I-R-I-K-O-S, means silk. All kinds of silk. I don't remember the last time I saw a tie that wasn't made out of silk. Most of the ties are silk. We use silk in a lot of things. People have silk bedspreads, silk bed sheets, silk pajamas. Whatever you want to wear, whatever you want to use your silk for. But it's, again, an expensive, more expensive garment, a more expensive product, generally speaking. And silk and coquinas. This word means red, crimson, or scarlet. And every kind or type. You've got and is chi here with the adjective pos. Again, when it's in an arthrous use of pos, no article, followed by a singular noun, it means every type or every kind. Every kind of zulon. Zulon means wood or tree. So what kind of woods do we import? Mahogany, a teak, all the valuable woods that you would get in other parts of the world that don't grow here really well. And I remember when my dad came back from the Congo, back when I was a kid, when he was a pilot in the Air Force. He came back from the Congo and he brought these two masts made out of ebony. And they're just blacker than hell. And, they were the masts that he had gotten there in the, I don't know where he got them. But that kind of thing, ebony, these expensive type woods. Every article of ivory. They say citron wood actually here is thuinos, means citron or thyine. Again, wood products, cabinets, flooring, building materials, all of that. And every vessel or utensil of ivory. Elephantinos is the word, E-L-E-P-H-A-N-T-I-N-O-S. Elephantinos. That means ivory or made out of ivory. And every vessel, skuos is the term here, a vessel made from wood. If you happen to like wood bowls, wood silverware, most people don't use wood silverware anymore, but I see these wood things, like they use these big tongs for getting your salad, and they're made out of wood in some cases. So all the things that you would use exotic woods for. Your end tables, your dining room tables, your bed frames, your dressers, all the things. And so, we're not talking about importing particle board here. That's not what he's talking about. And that's what a lot of the cheap stuff's made out of course, particle board. So every vessel of wood, actually made from very costly wood. Timios here is a superlative. T-I-M-I-O-S. The most valuable, rare wooden utensils or vessels. And vessels made from chalcos, brass. And sideros, iron. And marmoros. Literally, that word means to glisten. And it has the idea of marble. And all the imported marbles and things they use those for, flooring, other factors. That they would use countertops. Many of those will be granite. But if people could afford to put marble everywhere in their house, many of them do. They have marble windowsills, they have marble floors, and all of this. And so we import a lot of this stuff. And cinnamon. Let's move on now to the olfactory things. Things we like to smell and eat, use to flavor our foods. Cinnamon is kinamomon. That's actually not a bad rendition of our word cinnamon. And spice, amomam, a fragrant spice from India. It's hard to identify this particular one. Thumiyama means incenses. T-H-U-M-I-A-M-A. This would include incense that people burn, the candles, scented candles and all this kind of thing. Not that we have to import a lot of those. You could actually make those here. But that it would include all this. And murons, oils, unguents, balms, perfumes, all of that. And libanos, frankincense, L-I-B-A-N-O-S. And if you don't think that this is all, just go out to St. Armand's to the spice and tea thing out there and ask them how much of their stuff's imported. Just that one little store. You don't have to investigate the whole country. Just go out to that one little store and say, how much of your stuff's imported? And I'll bet you money it's a lot. A lot of it is. And frankincense. And wine. Elion. Oinos. All kinds of wine. We get wines from all over the world. Ports from Portugal. Bordeaux from France. All the many dessert wines and all the Rieslings from Germany. And now South Africa, Australia with the Shiraz has become a dominant winemaker. And there's always the wines you've had from the old worlds. Italy, you can get certain wines from Greece. Something Patras, I remember, was one of them. And Hungary makes a wine called Tokaj or Tokaji. And again, then you got all of this, the wine business and all that's involved with that. And when you go to the store, I mean, again, the wine industry in the U.S. is doing, well, Napa's just taking a big hit, but from all the fires and stuff. But the fact is, we still import massive amounts of wine, and they're not cheap wines. If it's a good year in Bordeaux, they start at about $80 for decent ones. And then, I if you want to look at some wines, if you want an idea for a Christmas present for the pastor, I mean, not for you. I can show you some wine. I got stuff out at Total Wine that's $15, $18, $3,000 a bottle. I'm not going to buy any, but it's nice to know it's there, I guess. So wines and olive oil. You got to have some good olive oil on yourself. You can't live without that. You can't watch a cooking show without olive oil. And not Popeyes. And here, wine, olive oil, fine flour, semidalis. S-E-M-I-D-A-L-I-S. Fine wheat flour. And setas, corn, wheat, or grain. And katanos here. Cattle. You think, well, wait a minute, why would it be important cattle? I mean, we grow all cattle here. We've got all of our beef industry here. We've got a thriving beef industry. Wrong. It's just what you think. We import 4 to 5 times more meat than we grow here. That's just astonishing. To me. You would think, well, you could get your beef supply locally. Nope. So cattle and sheep, probaton, again, an accusative neuter plural here. Cattle here means, okay, again, any herds, cattle, donkey, horses, etc. Probaton, sheep, and hippos, horses. Hippos is our word for horse. Chariots. Well, we don't use chariots or wagons anymore. We don't need the horses for that. We got horsepower under the hood. So figure out all the automobiles that are imported here. And of course, now in many cases, the manufacturers and our government likes to say, well, you know, and these are really made in the U.S. No, they use some parts and put them together here. But that doesn't mean they're manufactured in the U.S. So take out Toyota, all of these companies, Mazda, Hyundai, Kia, on and on and on. Honda, all the cars that are imported here. Mercedes, Alfa, Lamborghini, Ferrari, Volkswagen. How many of their cars are imported? If you're going to be a good citizen, you're going to have to buy an American car from now on. But nobody wants to. Why? Because everybody knew the quality for many years was nothing. You could buy a better car cheaper elsewhere. And that's sad. The lack of pride people took in their workmanship. So here you got chariots. Again, our modern automobiles. That also would include things like motorcycles, mopeds, all the rest of that. Any mode of transportation for getting around. Bicycles are probably included, but let's say that's not our first chariot of choice, is it? I mean, if you had a choice, would you ride in a luxury car, you know, on a bike? So, car, probably. And soma. Here's where it really gets bad. Soma means bodies. Literally, genitive, neuter, plural. And of bodies and souls of men. Again, men here, anthropos, doesn't mean just males. We deal in human lives. We traffic in human lives. And people can talk about the abolition of slavery and all that. It's slavery still goes on in this world. We know there's an incredible underground slave trade that goes on. There's a sex slave trade. They didn't call it getting shanghaied for nothing. You know, this has been going on throughout our history. And most people just stick their heads in the ground and act like it doesn't happen and we don't know about it. That's not going to clear us before God, acting like we don't know about it. And as we trade in the bodies and souls of men, again, I remember one of the things I read when they were describing these workers in the Nike factory, the walking dead of Satan. Now, these are the people that are working 12, 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, no time off, no vacations, none of this. Well, you got to have a vacation. You're an American. You're entitled to one. Well, of course you are, because you're an American. But the poor people in the Philippines and these other places, they're not. But thank God we can keep the cost of Air Jordans down. That's what's important. So, again, we traffic in people's lives and the impact of all of this. And we're going to be held accountable for it. See, at this point, the American public says, well, it doesn't affect me, so I don't care. Well, the chickens are coming home to roost. It's going to affect people. All right, well, we got through all of that. That's fine. We'll be ready. I got it a little over there, but we'll be ready to dive in here and deal with the exposition of this on next Sunday, not Tuesday. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to consider these matters. We pray that you would help us to ponder these things and to make any adjustments in our lives that are commensurate with your will for us. For we ask it in Christ's name. Amen.